let's see if we can get the sound mix here correct as we go live. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm going to turn down that mic. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And we'll have our usuals here this evening as we getting ready for high school football and all fall sports coming up pretty soon here on MSO News Sports. And right now we are actually featuring a whole bunch of football coaches and their profiles. We're talking to the coaches about them, and there have been some really fascinating stories so far. We've got a lot of we've featured a lot of coaches, and we have a lot more to go. So please check out the website and you know, take a look and let us know what you think. MSO News Sports at gmail.com. So far we have posted Brian St. Pierre, St. John's Prep, St. Mary's Sean Driscoll, Jim Rudloff of Marblehead, Lynn Classical's Brian Vaughn. We've got others scheduled. I've talked already with Colin McQueen of Amesbury, and we'll be posting Jeff Hutton of Beverly High School, whom Bill Tim will be talking to a lot this season, I presume. And great stories on how they got into football and their backgrounds and so on, how they got into coaching. So please check those out. Sort of a summer filler right now that I find very fascinating. The coaches have been terrific. But let's bring in Tim. Tim, we had for tonight our topic, just kind of having fun with us this summer, was originally, as suggested by Steve Krause, who we'll be talking to in a minute, is clutch players. And Mike Grenier and I had a hard time with that, at least I did, in whittling down clutch players because, one, I'm old, so I know a lot of sports heroes. I know about a lot of sports heroes over the centuries. And it was really difficult for me to whittle it down. But you and I were just talking before we went on the air about some of the criteria of being a clutch player, and I'd like for you to go over that with me, please.
Well, for one to be considered a clutch player, like any other metric determining greatness, it has to be done over a sustained period of time, over a career, not a career of 1 or 2 years, but a career of upwards of a decade, sometimes into 2 decades. And the thing about what makes a clutch player is you have to look at how often does this person come up in a critical situation and how often do they come through with a hit, an RBI, a home run. On the defensive side, it's a big catch. It's doubling a guy off of base. You know, there's a lot of ways in which you can be clutch. But the opportunities to be that guy that makes the clutch play is going to vary from player to player, from instance to instance. So it's really tough to, I think, say, well, who was the most clutch player of an era? Because what we end up doing is thinking about the most clutch event in our own collective memory, generally about our team or a team that we followed over a long period of time. And, you know, thinking back through our mindset of the Red Sox, of the Orioles, of the Patriots, you know, we're going to Patriots automatically say, well, the most clutch player has been Tom Brady because he's come through so many times.
Yeah, you start.
He gave a big ride. You know, he pushed the team downfield. He's defied the odds, like that first Super Bowl when John Madden said they should take a knee, and Brady went right down the field and led him to the winning field goal.
Yeah, that's
and left him with, you know, pie on his face eating crow, because that was Tom Brady's personality. Red Sox, my God, this is the history of the Red Sox, and you've got to go, you know, back 100-plus years. You know, we don't know a lot of those early clutch ball players, but the great names that we know existed, you know, Ted Williams, the most clutch guy, Wade Boggs, the most clutch guy. I mean, he's one of the Red Sox greatest hitters ever. Kyle Skremski, who played 22 years. You know, is he the most clutch guy? We can't say that. You know, from the Celtics, you got Bill Russell. But you have to include John Havlicek in that mixture. Because how many great plays did he make over the the life of his lawn career. From the Bruins, you start with Bobby.
Okay, whoa! Now you're getting into my territory now. See, you've covered all my stuff because what I want to mention is that what we want to do is you. I think you and Steve are going to talk about Clutch. And then Mike and I, and of course we can all join in the conversation, Mike and I want to talk about the Boston sports Mount Rushmore. And that's a lot easier to do, I think, although there will be some debate about that. But it's funny you mentioned, Tim, about, you know, your collective memory, because when I was doing the thing about clutch players all time, all sports, I read something, in fact it was today, about Mickey Mantle that I had totally forgotten about. And, you know, Mickey Mantle, in the 50s and 60s, well, in the 50s primarily, just won so many ball games. I mean, you know, walk-off home runs and, clutch situations, and I don't know how many World Series he won. So, I think it's an impossible task.
Well, it certainly is, because, you know, what criteria are you going to establish, that is consistent across the world of sports, you know, and Mantle made the comment, I believe, one time, it was how much better his numbers would have been had he been sober.
Oh, yeah. He and Whitey Ford, both.
Had he not tore up his knee in the water drain out in center field at the old Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
You know?
All right.
So he would have all of the records. But unfortunately, you know, those things transpired. But yeah, I mean, Mickey Mantle, how do you argue with that? Willie Mays. You know, there's just so many outstanding, all-time great players, and you don't get to be named an all-time great unless you have proven yourself clutch.
Amen. Amen to that. All right, we'll see if we can bring in Steve here, and let's see what his criteria are, and then we can sort of do a round-robin on that and let you guys duke it out. I find it was much easier. Although, again, there'll be some debate. Much easier to come up with a Mount Rushmore for each of the four major Boston teams. I did not include the Revs because I know nothing about them. So we'll get to that later on. But let's take a break, Tim, and see if we can get Steve in here. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell is off this week, happily, for him and his family, I trust. But he's still checking in remotely and so on. But it's going to slow things down a little bit this week for us. Anyway, let's see if we can get Steve here in just a second. So please stay with us.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
We are MSONewsSports.com, the North Shore's news and sports website, featuring North Shore Sports Night, Monday nights at 7, the North Shore and Merrimack Valley Sports Desk shows, hosting on Thursdays, North Shore Today, the area's multimedia, community-based daily magazine. Our connections feature interview segments. Spread the word about MSONewsSports.com as we support North Shore communities with our exclusive content, powered by Moynihan Lumber, Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire.
All right, this is we got an open line to Steve's recorder, and I don't know how to shut it off without canceling you out here. So I don't know what the heck to do. I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to cut this thing off completely, Tim, and call you back, because this is a very limited system here, and I don't want to, you know, use up all of Steve's recording. What do you call that? Voice recording. So hang in there. I'll be right back. Here we go. Are you still? No, you're not there. Jeez. Oh, man. All right, so I'm going to give Tim a call back, and we'll go from here. And da-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum. Yeah, I can't shut off one call without shutting them both off, so that's what I had to do. And he didn't answer, so hopefully he'll call in. So let's get back to your stuff, Tim. I think... The easiest to me, the easiest... Oh, here he is. So let's get... All right, I'll be right back. Hello, Rick Moore.
Rick Moore.
Hold. All right, hold on, Steve. I've got to give Tim a call. I'll be right back. Okay. This is crazy. And there we go.
What are you doing?
All right. So Steve checked in. Steve, are you there? Oh, my goodness gracious. Steve, are you there? Hello, Steve.
Hello, Rick.
Oh, there we go. Tim, are you there? Oh, my goodness gracious. All right. Tim, are you there? This is nuts. I've never had this trouble before. All right. Let me put some music on here, and then I'll see if I can figure this thing out and get you guys on. Tim, you're there.
I'm here.
All right. And Steve, you're here. What the boat? Steve. Hello, Steve. All right. We're just going to start again from scratch. Be right back. I've never had that kind of problem with this thing. You know what, Steve? I never had this kind of problem when Tim was in studio, because Tim used to run the phones, and everything worked so smoothly. Anyway, Steve Krause is here, sports journalist, along with Tim Kearns, our Goodwill ambassador and sports analyst. And Steve, to get this thing rolling, Tim was having a discussion about clutch players. And Mike and I have decided to go with something different because it was too big a universe for me to whittle down. But Tim had some great points. And I wonder, when you came up with the idea of this, what are your just tell me about the idea of what's a clutch player to you in whatever.
A clutch player, to me, it's not that complicated for me. It's just somebody who consistently not only comes through in tough situations, but even if he doesn't come through in tough situations, he is the world's most impossible out. You know, he might take a pitcher, 10 pitches, and pop up, but he's left the pitcher so spent after that that the next batter gets a fat one and gets a hit, you know? And when I thought about it afterwards, I said, it is kind of a tough universe. And most of the ones that you mentioned, it just comes down to what order you're going to put them in, because I think we all know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be a couple of surprises in there. They're like, for example, obviously, Tom Brady is, to me, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Tom Brady's number one. Bill Russell was number two. You know, after that, you just slaughter me where you feel like they're necessary. I mean, Reggie Jackson, I put closer to number 10 than number one. Because you got to just start someplace, right? Reggie Jackson had a good few years as Mr. October, but, you know, other than that, he was he was fairly ordinary. Plus, he struck out a lot. Number nine would be, to me, Derek Jeter. I am of the opinion that when it came to being clutch, Derek Jeter was a pest. You know, he might not have got a hit every time, but he wasn't going down 1-2-3. And all I can remember with Jeter is that it's the eighth inning of Game 7 in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
There's already one out in the inning, and who hits a double to right field to start the rally? D. Jeter.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it doesn't matter that Trout and Nixon got all turned around the wrong way but on it and should have cut the ball. But he still hit it, and he still gave it a ride, and Trout and Nixon did turn around and it turns around all the wrong way, and it did bounce, and he got a double, and that started the rally. So things like that are the things that impress me. Number eight is number eight. Kyle Yastrzemski. Well, beyond the 1967 heroics, in the 1975 playoffs and World Series, he hit a ton, particularly in the playoffs. He was hitting the ball all over the lot, plus making great plays. So I would have to put him in there as number eight. I'm putting pitchers in here, too, because pitchers are just as clutch as anybody else's. And number seven to me is Jack Morris. Detroit Tigers, Minnesota Twins, 11-inning shutout. He always came up big in big situations. Number six, David Ortiz. David Ortiz, what can you say? You know, every time the Red Sox needed a clutch hit, David Ortiz was there. Number five, Johnny Havlicek. There is no way that you can have any clutch list without Johnny Havlicek on the list.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, the best, you know, of all of them. I think number four, Larry Bird. Larry Bird probably wasn't as fluid as Havlicek was, but boy, oh boy, oh boy. Clutch plays, clutch baskets, clutch everything. Larry Bird. Number three, Michael Jordan. There isn't anything else we can say about Michael Jordan. And of course, you got my numbers one and two, Brady and Russell.
Yeah, yeah. Tim?
You know, you can't have any complaints about those. You know, my discussion with Rick Pryor, I had, you know, I said Brady, and you know, Bill Russell with the Celtics, you don't win 11 championships in 13 years, you know, without, and he was the anchor of that whole team, you know.
Yeah.
He was the consistent, he was the one constant throughout all those championships was Russell. I mentioned Brady, but I also had John Havlicek in that mix when he talked about clutch ball players, because he ran everybody else off the court, literally. He was perpetual motion, and he got more open shots and more open drives of the basket simply by running that weave as well as they did, and him just running his man off of that high pick and heading down the lane all by himself. You know, if you're of a certain age, you can still see that weave working. And I keep wondering, why don't they run the weave today?
They don't do a lot of things today, Tim, that they did back then.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
I mean, how many good low post players are there today?
No, so, well, it's all me basketball, so let me throw it a three.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the unfortunate part, so that's why I don't like to watch it anymore. But no, I have no arguments with the list, and I'm sure, you know, if we spent time going through rosters over the past, you know, 100 years, you know, we'd find other guys, you know, okay, well, we can take this guy out and put this guy in. But, you know, I said, the Rick, we operate from our own time frame. Who do we know? Who have we seen? Who have we seen make the play? You know, and you know, someone will go, well, Kirk Gibson. Well, he had one clutch hit.
Yeah.
You know, when he took Eckersley deep with one up, you know.
How about Bob Gibson?
Toughest omission for me wasn't him, though. Toughest omission for me was LeBron James. And the only reason why I omitted him was because there were as many series that he stuck as there were when he was good, particularly in the early days of his career. He didn't really get it going until much later in his career, when he was really consistently good. I also got to give a shout out to Don Mattingly someplace too. He was really good, but I'm going to stand by this list. I'm a big Jeter fan. I know people are going to disagree with that. I'm a big Jeter fan. I just think that he's the guy. There's a third part to this too. And the third part is that who is the one of all the baseball players in this last 20 years that you did not want to see up at bat with the game on
right.
the line?
Yeah.
I wanted to run away and hide every time Jeter came up. You know, I just liked him. I always loved his steadiness. You know, I loved his attitude. He was cool, you know, and he just, no matter when it was, if he didn't get a hit, he was taxing that pitcher. So, you know, I just...
And the thing about Jeter, Steve, and I think it's what makes him so acceptable to so many fans around the baseball world, is he played the game the way you expected it to be played. He conducted himself the way you would expect a professional to conduct himself. He wasn't over... Bob, he wasn't a big mouth. He wasn't always pointing at himself. You know, he went out there and he did the job he was paid to do, and he did it in, I wouldn't say spectacular fashion, but he did it in that steady, dependable fashion that makes you an author, that makes you an MVP, that makes the people on the other who support the other team go, oh, that guy is really freaking good. Because he made the plays, and yeah, he's the one guy in the Yankees that you wanted on your team.
Yeah, I agree. I just thought he was. If you were coming up and you wanted to know how to play, you watched him, and that was how to play. You know, and there's a story someplace that he learned how to play from Mattingly. You know, Mattingly took him out on a field way in the back part of the complex and taught him how to play. Taught him the Yankee way, I guess you could call it. But a lot of those Yankee guys were like that during that era. They were just, did not draw attention to themselves. They just went out there and played.
But that's what drew your attention to them, is the manner in which they played, in which they presented themselves. They played with that Yankee mystique, you know, where the uniform said it all about them.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out and they played with the ghost of Yankee players past on their shoulders.
Yep.
And those
stripes just put terror into everybody.
What was that?
Those pinstripes just put terror into everybody.
Yeah.
All right, I want to throw some names at you guys, at both of you, because some of the guys you mentioned, I try to put together a list of clutch, and I had everybody, most of the guys you mentioned, I did not have Jeter on there, but guys I have that you don't, and Tim, I don't know if you do, I'll just put these names out there: Pedro Martinez, Sandy Koufax, Babe Ruth, Jim Brown, Bart Starr, Michael Jordan, you had Jordan, and Wayne Gretzky. And I just didn't know how to whittle it down. I mean, as Tim said, you focus on, you know, the sports that you follow in your own sphere, your own community, that kind of thing. But you can't miss the national picture.
And there's a name that none of us have that is absolutely should be on there, and that's Bobby Orr.
Oh, I've got him. I've got him. I forgot the yeah. Orr's red. He's number three in my all time.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can't put everybody on.
That's right.
And I figured, you know, I could go 1 to 10 with Boston athletes.
Oh, yeah. I think we all three of us could.
Yeah. And, you know, that would be a little bit too Boston-centric. You know?
When are you going to have your next sports musings?
This week, hopefully.
I hope so. I love reading. Oh, I love reading those. We got to get those out, man.
Hey, Steve.
All right.
Steve, when we were younger, and I mean a lot younger, in the item, there used to be a column called six second salads. Do you remember those?
I remember 60 Second Sports. I don't remember the other one.
No, in the item, it was a column called six second salads, and they were just little tidbits. And I gotta go back and try to look in the item archives and see if I can find one of those. But they were just little snippets, a column of them.
Must have been Red Hoffman who wrote it. Hello?
And what made me think of them was Rick mentioning your sports tidbits.
Well, it's been a couple of tough weeks.
Yes.
Personally.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. Yes, yes. Sorry about your loss, Steve.
And, get back down to it, you know.
Yeah.
I never like to be too far away from it because there were a couple of things that I really want to delve into.
You know,
one of them involves the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one, I was going to wait until tomorrow.
Okay.
So that I could get through the trading deadline before I said anything.
How do you
happy right now with the fact that Red Sox have not done either. You know, other than kicking Kiki to the curb,
mm-hmm.
What have they done?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Zero. Put the word to the page. Because it's so easy with a keyboard, you know, a typewriter keyboard or a regular keyboard on a desktop computer. How do you do it on social media? Do you do it otherwise and then put it on social media?
Well, there's a space that you can write anything you want. That you just hit send. It's not unlike much of anything else. I mean, if you want to really work on it, you put it in your own file and then you just drag and drop or...
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah, I got you, because I can't do the thumb thing like kids can.
Yeah.
All right.
If there's ever anything you want to learn about computer, find your youngest kid. Find the six-year-old.
That's exactly correct.
Ask the six-year-old what to do,
or
he'll embarrass you so bad you want to hide under the bed.
Or an iPhone. So, yeah.
Right.
Or a smartphone. All right, I have an idea, guys, for the next time. This should be a little easier, and I think probably, hopefully, as much fun. Is just come up with your top three sports moments. Because...
Oh, I'd love that, yeah.
You know, that makes it a little easier because we can be homers or we can go national or worldwide, whatever. But I'm thinking, come up with your top three, and I bet we can have a really interesting list among the four of us.
Is there any limits to seeing, like whether you saw them live or whether you saw them on TV or whether you didn't see them on TV because they weren't on TV until 11 o'clock that night?
Yeah.
You know, stuff, because you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well,
and
those we can eliminate.
What's that?
Are there certain events that we can eliminate so we kind of like spread it out a little bit? Because, you know, everyone's going to go, okay, the U.S. hockey in 1980.
No, you're not. No, you're not going to get mine. You won't have any idea. Mine aren't, no. Mm-mm. Yeah, well, no. So yeah, let's spread it out. Yeah, I'm all for that.
I mean, the obvious two that I can think of right away is that one, Vinatieri's field goal to win the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I mean, three could be almost anything.
Hey, talk about clutch.
What I was trying to say is, I don't know whether, you know, it's a nice thing, but I fear that everybody will have the same thing, and there's got to be a way we can. How about we say top three sports moments other than 1980 Olympics or something like that, because I would have to think that's everybody's top moment. I mean, if you're alive for that, there is no way you could ever forget that.
It'd be one of three, no, for sure, Steve.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's. Yeah, I get you right. I hear what you're saying, Steve and Tim. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's see if we can put some parameters on this thing.
Not the obvious one.
Okay.
There could be many reasons why you have top three sports moments that nobody would think about, that you think about, because they bring you back to a certain time in your life, or, you know, you were there and you saw it live, you know, which would probably be my,
okay.
Because I've seen so many of them. I would probably want to make mine things that I saw live.
Personal. I love it. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, that might be a good thing to add on there. What's the three biggest moments that you've personally seen?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right, let's do it.
That would eliminate a lot of things most people are going to say.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I have a lot, but that would also kind of open it up, because a lot of the ones I saw did not involve Boston teams.
Yeah, exactly.
So they were teams that beat Boston teams, but they weren't Boston sports moments. So.
I've got three easy that weren't Boston teams, so yeah, that's a great idea. Okay.
All right.
All right, Steve, as always, it's fun. I'm looking forward to your next sports musings, and be well, and let's have a good week. No more bad news from anybody.
Oh, I could use a week without it. Thanks.
I hear you. All right, Steve. Bye. Be well. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Steve Krause, most recently of the Daily Item, and now a sports journalist. He still works for the Item from time to time and helps us out, but he's got a great... on social media, he does a fantastic sports column that is so thoughtful, and I just love it. And he gets a lot of responses, and it's really cool. And we got to find a way to get it out there and make it more well known. All right, Tim, we'll take a break, and this is North Shore Sports Night. Come back with Mike Grenier, continue this thing, and Mike and I think we're going to talk about the Mount Rushmore of Boston sports, and I think probably. Everybody will be in agreement on that. I know Tim has his, it's, everybody knows the names. It's just going to be the order that we look at. All right. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Don't forget sports desks at the end of the week on Thursdays, North Shore Sports Desk and Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. We'll be right back.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
You guys can hear me. I guess that's all that matters. So,
I
lost my mic. Wait a minute. It's shorting out on me. There we go. It's back now. I had a short. The board was shorted. The mixer. That's weird. That's never happened before. A lot of stuff has never happened. Anyway, Mike Grenier is with us, another sports journalist. And Mike, welcome back. How you doing?
Oh, it's great to be with you guys. I think it's so fun to kind of go around the table tonight and, you know, like list the clutch five. And I think, Rick, you and I might be doing our Mount Rushmore, a Boston team, so it's kind of like spreads the subject matter around.
Yeah, and Tim has my mic just shorted out again. What is causing that? What the heck is going on here? Hello, testing. Oh man. Okay, there we go. I know what now. It was into the computer. The computer cord was loose. Okay, so my apologies. All right, so Mike, I put together the Mount Rushmore of the Celtics, the Bruins, the Red Sox, and the Patriots, and I'm gonna let you start because I'm betting, and I know I'm pretty sure Tim will have pretty much the same people, but it'll probably be in a different order. So why don't you start us off?
Yeah. Okay. Well, sure. All right. So Tim's really getting into the whole mix tonight with the clutch things as well as this now.
That's why he's our analyst. Yep.
I'll tell you why. He's a versatile guy.
Yeah.
Yep, you're a versatile guy. All right, why don't we start with the Red Sox? Even though the calendar year, the Bruins and the Celtics are playing in January and February and March, but I'm going to start with the Red Sox only because, you know, spring training seems to be the rite of passage, and, you know, a new sport year begins, right, guys?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give you like a Mount Rushmore. And Rick, I don't know if you did this in Tim, but I also included my biggest omission, okay?
Oh.
From each of those four teams.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
All right. So I'm going to go with the Red Sox first. Ted Williams, okay?
Mm.
Easy, universal.
Mm-hmm.
Pedro Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Yastrzemski.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one's going to shock you guys, and only because I'm omitting someone you guys will probably be contesting me with. And my number four on the Mount Rushmore is Cy Young.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Who, in his first three seasons with the Red Sox, won 93 games and lost like 20.
Okay.
And of course, he won 511 games.
Yep.
I don't want to overlook those ancient guys because he meant so much to the game. And he won 511 games of his career. So those are my four for the Red Sox. And the toughest omission for me is Carlton Fisk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah. All right. Well, and then I'll turn it over to Tim in a minute. Obviously, Ted Williams, number one.
Yep.
My number two is Big Poppy.
Okay.
I think, talk about clutch. I mean, my God, that World Series he had in 16 or 18, whatever it was.
Yep.
My number three, this is going to be a shocker, Pedro Martinez.
Yeah, okay, I've got him in my top four, yeah.
Oh, okay, and my number four is Jason Varitek.
Okay.
So my biggest omission are the two guys, with three guys you named, Yaz, Fisk, and Cy Young. I mean, my goodness gracious. But I go with Williams, Ortiz, Martinez, and Varitek. Tim?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with any of those guys. I mean, you know, Ted Williams is at the top of the pantheon. No matter who you are, you know, unless you were born yesterday and don't know who Ted Williams is, you know, that is certainly true. For the time that he was here and the domination that he showed, certainly I agree. Pedro is there. For the time that he was here and what he produced, I like Wade Boggs.
Oh yeah.
Boggs. Talking about clutch players.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
Average 340 while he was playing here in Boston. You know, consistently took the ball to the opposite. He literally hit the ball where it was pitched.
Yep.
And during his time, he was the best two strike hitter
mm-hmm.
in baseball.
Oh
I
yeah, he was fanatical. Yeah,
he put himself behind the two strikes. So that it would increase his focus on the next pitches coming in. Because no matter where it was, high, low, inside, outside, he could handle it, and he put it into fair territory.
Yep.
And he hit for power. He hit 20-plus home runs every year.
Yep.
So I like Boggsy for what he contributed, and unfortunately he didn't have enough around him to make it go. I have to go, you know, and again, we look back through the time period of, you know, of all the Sox.
Yeah.
And you go, you know, Bobby Doerr.
Sure. Sure.
A name that a lot of people forget, but boy, was he freaking good. You know, God, there's just so many. Overlooked. I think Bobby Doerr would be my overlooked guy.
Mm-hmm. Your omission guy, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's on the Red Sox Hall of Fame list up at Fenway, you know, and I don't think a lot of people appreciated what he did during that time period of contributing to the success that the Sox had. And he should be remembered for that.
Yep.
So those are my guys on the Sox.
Excellent.
Tim, if I can add an anecdote about Boggs, because I covered a lot of his career, and I remember one spring training, when he hit 500, Tim, spring training, and he got left back at spring training. In other words, they felt he wasn't ready yet. I still remember covering that and going like, wow, and writing a story about it. But sure enough, come May or whatever it was, he was called up to the team and he began his long career in the majors. But I just remember he tore it up at spring training. He literally hit 500 and they didn't keep him on the varsity.
All right, great list from everybody. What's next, Mike?
Okay, Patriots next, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with This is the most obvious choice in the history of the universe, Tom Brady.
Yeah, you think?
Rob Gronkowski.
Ooh, Gronk, okay.
Greatest tight end, I believe, in league history, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of his impact, his power, winning Super Bowls. Julian Edelman, a personal favorite for me because they drafted him as a... They didn't know what they were going to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
They drafted him as a football player, and he became Brady's favorite target and won 3 Super Bowls. And then my fourth person is Adam Vinatieri, because he spent his first 9 years with the Patriots. And when I think of the important kicks in Patriots history after he had not won a Super Bowl ever, that kick, first of all, in the snow, the driving snow, in the Snow Bowl against the Raiders, the 45-yarder, not the winning kick, which was a short kick, but the 45-yarder to him through a thick snow that tied the game,
mm-hmm.
right?
Which gave the Patriots a second chance, and then he won the game. And then, of course, the first 2 Super Bowls they won, you know, he kicked a 48-yarder and a 47-yarder, you know, against the Rams and the Panthers, you know, respectively. So that's why he's my fourth guy. And the biggest omission is a guy who I actually covered, John Hanna.
Hanna.
The greatest blocker, I believe, in league history. A 13-year guy. I knew him personally. I covered those teams very closely. And unfortunately, they were bad teams. They had bad teams. But he was such a dominating force in the offensive line. And they had great running backs. And, I mean, because of him and the offensive line, they did have some really terrific years piling up rushing yards because of him. But what a powerhouse blocker he was, I think the greatest offensive lineman in history.
There you go.
There's my four, and then the biggest omission was John Hanna.
I watched a game at the old Sullivan Stadium, or whatever, you know, the old freezing bowl of aluminum there.
Right.
And I had binoculars. We were way up at the top, and I was looking at Hanna all night long. I was watching Hanna. It was an afternoon game. And I'm watching him, because remember they had the sweep, the pulling guard and all that stuff?
Yes.
And he gets into the secondary, and I am not kidding you when I say this. I don't know who the back was or linebacker or whatever, but the defender saw Hanna coming at him, and the defender actually flopped to the ground to get out of the way.
That's surprising.
I'm not kidding, and I thought, oh, my God. Well, my list is exactly the same except for one position.
Yep.
I had Brady. My number 2 was Bledsoe. My number 3 was Edelman. My number 4 was Vinatieri. Leaving Gronk and Hanna out was probably a sin on my part. But just
no. This is all very subjective, obviously, too. You know,
I love Bledsoe. I thought Steve Grogan was the savior of the Patriots back in the 80s. I thought that the Patriots were finally going to become an actual NFL team, and they came close. And Grogan was the toughest son of a gun. But then Bledsoe came along, and he just was the absolute stereotype of a tall, in-the-pocket passer. And he just, I remember the game he threw 70 passes against Minnesota in a great comeback.
Right. Wow. Yeah. And of course, and he was the guy, because Parcells was the coach, they elevated their status as a contender, with Bledsoe in there. And of course, he had that unfortunate injury, which he could have died.
Yeah.
And Brady took over, and the rest, as we know, is history. But Bledsoe was certainly a great talent, and also a great representative of the team they were trying to build.
Well, not only that, but he also was a classy guy. I mean,
he
still supported the team when he wasn't, you know, he was healthy and they wouldn't put him back in. Then he came back in that Pittsburgh playoff game for one game, and the Patriots won with him, and then they brought Brady back in. I just thought Bledsoe was, I would have put him number 1 if it weren't for Tom Brady, obviously.
Right, sure. So, Tim, what have you got for us on that one?
Well, I have John Hanna first.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I have two images of John Hanna. And one was a picture that appeared either in the Globe or the Herald. And it was John Hanna pulling on that sweep. And he's got Mac Heron holding on to the back of his jersey.
Yeah.
And Mac Heron is literally in the air. He has both feet in the air. He is slingshotting off of John Hanna. And
oh, sure.
I always love that picture. I think John Hanna, and I automatically think of that picture. And if I hear Mac Heron's name, I think of him holding on to John Hanna's backside and just off the ground. Here we go. You know, just pulling because it was unbelievable. And the other image I have of John Hanna is how sad he was when they lost that 86 Super Bowl, because both, The 86 Super Bowl to Chicago, and because both of his knees were shot.
Yes.
And
yep.
couldn't really move. And he yep. was devastated by his lack of ability to be his best at that biggest moment. And,
right.
you know, William the Fritz Perry, you know, had a field day, and Richard Dent did it as well as the rest of the Chicago line, but he felt he could do nothing to stop it because his knees were in such bad shape.
Yep.
And I felt just awful reading that, and I'm thinking, I would have loved to have seen him taking any one of those guys on at the height of his career when
yep.
everything was in one piece.
All right, Tim, you got three more?
Okay, I got Brady.
Yep.
Guy I love to watch play. And I don't think they've had anybody as fast as this guy. Stanley the Steamer.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Stanley came in mind as a receiver. I know Randy Moss was great. He did it for a year, 2 years. You know, but Morgan continually put up big numbers.
Oh, yeah, he put up great numbers, yeah.
Yep.
You know, and just go down the field, no problem.
Yep.
And the running back out of the University of Southern California,
Sam the
Vanderbilt, going over the top, legendary at USC, and then came here and did the exact same thing.
Yep.
You know, go back to the time when the Pats really started to gain an identity as something of a quality team. The team that they had there was growing a quarterback, you know, and Stanley Morgan and Sam Cunningham, and oh my God, that was a fun team to watch, Mike.
It was, no doubt about it. So those are the four guys, Tim, and then you have the biggest omission out of that whole. There's been so many really good Patriots players. Do you have a biggest omission?
I have to go with Vinatieri simply because of the. He
yep.
became much. You needed a chip shot. You got the chip shot. You needed a 50 yard. He'd even drive those in. So he wasn't known for length, but
right.
he'd drive them anyway.
Oh yeah, but that kick in the snow, right, guys? We remember that game.
Oh yeah.
It was snowing. So I remember we were over a friend's house in North Andover, and it was kept on snowing. And I didn't even know if we'd get home that night. But I just remember him in the biggest moment in that. The worst part of the storm in Foxborough, and they needed the 3 points to tie the game to give themselves a chance to even win the game later on, and he delivered that 45-yarder. The thing I remember most, Rick and Tim, is that from a TV perspective, I couldn't even see the ball left his foot because it was snowing so hard, and it was he kicked a low-line drive on purpose because he knew that the snow and the wind might make it drift wide of the goalposts. But he kicked like a line drive, like you see a Wade Boggs line drive, to get it over
yeah.
the goalpost. It was an incredibly sensational kick, and of course, he followed that with winning Super Bowl kicks in the first two
mm-hmm.
championships they won.
And Mike, you know, he was handicapped by the fact that the players could only kick out the snow and try to find the field with their feet. They
yeah.
couldn't bring out the snowplow because they had already tried that trick.
Right.
He was the fuller that got banned the next year. Of course, John Schultz
yeah.
said, no, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, but do you remember John Gruden called a timeout, which was a mistake because the Patriots players tried to at least create a little bit of a path with their cleats for
right.
him to have a little bit of a cleaner slate, a surface to kick the ball. And I think Gruden later admitted that he made a mistake by calling a timeout.
Well, you know, not as smart as he thinks he is.
yeah.
All right, Mike, let's go. What's next?
Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, this wasn't the easiest for me anyway, and I'll see what you guys have to say. That Bill Russell, John Havlicek,
yep.
Larry Bird,
mm-hmm.
Kevin McHale.
Ooh, okay. Yep.
Biggest omission, Sam Jones.
Oh, God. I was thinking maybe Cousy. Oh, my God.
Well, he could have been easy. Dave Cowens, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Great teams. All right, so mine is Russell,
yep.
number one. I had to put Larry Bird number two. C- because I just saw a video on his game-winning shots during his career.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a million of them, you know, in clutch situations. My goodness. Number three is Havlicek, so I just reversed those. My number four is Paul Pierce.
Sure.
Paul Pierce was kind of... he was kind of like a Jason Tatum type for a long time. Who was the other guy with him? Antoine Walker. So, but then Pierce, you know, he did that. He had that silly thing where he limped out of the stadium in a wheelchair or something, then came back in the game.
Right.
But he grew up after that. And
plus, obviously, he really flourished once they acquired Kevin Garnett.
Yes, yes. Yep.
He was able to. Defenses weren't able to just concentrate on him. Because now the Celtics had Garnett and Ray Allen, and that's why they won the championship.
And what I like is he stuck around. He's still a Celtic. I love that.
Yep. And did you have an omission, Rick?
There's so many of them. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, like you said, Cowens, Cousy, Sam Jones.
Oh, my. Well, the whole early lineup of all the championships, Robert Parrish, you know, and I'm thinking there's so many of them.
Heinsohn,
Hall of Famers. I mean, I left out probably half a dozen Hall of Famers or more.
Dennis Johnson.
There's so many of them. Yeah. You know, but those four just jumped out. I just kind of went with a knee-jerk reaction, you know. Tim.
I basically almost have yards. Like I had Russell, then Barrett, then Havlicek.
Mm-hmm.
I like Cousy. You know, Cousy modernized the point guard position.
Oh, yeah.
Good point. Yep.
He was a magician. He was Magic and all these other crazy point guards before they were ever around.
I agree.
And he did it all. And he was the spark plug in the Celtics early engine that drove all those championships. Yeah, you had Russell guarding the back door. But you had Cousy pounding down the front door of the opposition.
And you know, Tim, in those days, there were many games where Cousy would have like 18, 19, 20 assists because he was a true point guard, and he had guys like Bill Russell and Heinsohn and Havlicek and Sam Jones scoring for him.
Exactly.
So he had a lot of assists in a ton of games early in his career.
Yeah, you know, he followed the edge. Give it to the guys that can score.
Yeah.
My high school coach told me.
The one player.
You could shoot some.
The one
And my overlook, I got to go Dave Cowens because, sheer hustle.
Yeah.
Sheer determination. He played in an era where guys, the centers are getting bigger. You know, he played against Wes Unseld, and he didn't give up a whole lot of height, but he gave up probably 40 or 50 pounds. Willis Reed, the same thing. And then
Abdul-Jabbar.
Jabbar, you know, and all the other, you know, seven-footers at the time. And he drives them crazy because he'd run them right off the court. Literally run them off the court. And then, you know, there are those individual moments of certain players. You know, when Cowens had that cheap foul called on him, and he's running down the court, and he gives the defender... that he's running to a two-hand shove, puts the guy on his backside, turned around with the ref and goes, now that's the foul.
Right.
And I'm thinking, and on national TV, I'm thinking, whoa, this guy's got big ones. And but that's just how fierce Dave Cowens was.
Right.
You know, if he was fighting along William Wallace, the Scots would have won the day.
And of course, he did, Tim, win the two NBA titles, 1974 and 76.
Exactly.
All right, Bruins.
Bruins, here we go. Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito,
mm-hmm.
Ray Bourque,
mm-hmm.
Milt Schmidt,
mm-hmm.
and the overlooked guy, omission guy, Eddie Shore.
Oh, my. Okay. All right. Well, mine is different. Why diverge a little bit on this one? Number one, of course, it's Orr. I mean, hello, if you ever watched hockey. My number two, and I ruminated about this, and I've thought about it a whole lot, because most people put Ray Bourque number two. I'm putting Patrice Bergeron as number two. And the reason I'm doing it is because he was such a 200-foot player. He played 200 feet for for 18, 17 years. Now, Bork, of course, you know, played for 22. But Bork was a defenseman, and albeit the second greatest defenseman they've ever had, maybe in the league. But I got to go with Bork number two. He's just a favorite of mine.
Yep.
Bergeron number two.
Yep.
Bork is number three, and I put Espo four. So anybody else that's left out, I mean, so many of them. Rick Middleton was a favorite. So many great guys over the years. But that's my – so it's similar. So it's pretty much the same as yours. Tim?
I went with Mills Schmidt. I know, Tim, only because – well, first of all, he did win two titles as a player in 1939 and 41, but he was around the Bruins for nearly 80 years.
Okay, good point. Yep, good point.
He was the architect behind the 1970 and 1972 Stanley Cup champion. So he was involved in four of the six championships.
Yep.
You know, in a pretty much a direct or, you know, indirect way. So that's why I felt him being such a winner and his longevity, that's why I included him in my top four. Tim, you're up.
Okay, rather than Bobby Orr, I had Don Ory.
Mm-hmm.
Don Ory? In the top four?
Stop kidding. Wanted to hear the gap, and you went, someone went, what?
I thought you were going to say Stan Jonathan or something like that.
But who laid a, what defense in you laid a better check than Don Ory?
Phil Esposito. I mean, I tell you who was a better checker was Johnny Busick.
Oh, well, he's on my list. But,
ooh.
Well, he wasn't a defenseman. Don Ory, they actually outlawed butt ending. He would take, slide a guy into the board, take the butt end of his stick, put it in the guy's rib, and lift him into the glass.
And they
banned that because of him. And he used to do it, and he was tough as nails.
Who do you think?
Bobby Orr, of course. It was fun to watch Orr on a power play actually skate back towards his own goalie and watch the other team chase him because they couldn't catch him that way either.
You know? Right, right.
And then as he would glide up the ice and he would simply weave his way through the other team, and it's like, this looks just way too easy for him. I don't know how he does it. Espo, you know, setting the scoring record, who else prompted a bumper sticker? You know, Jesus saves and Espo scores in the rebound. No other goal scorer ever had a bumper sticker like that.
Yep.
You know, and you could buy that at Spencer's. We all remember that story.
Yeah.
I went with Borky, you know, again, total class. Like you said, 22 years, you know, we had to, you know, send them to Colorado so that they could win, because they were going to win the Stanley Cup, and we actually wanted him to have a chance to win one.
Yeah.
And then remember when he brought the cup back to the Garden to show the fans?
Yep.
Yeah.
The fans went wild because they knew how much it meant to him.
Right.
How much we appreciated him. And then, of course, giving his number seven to Espo on Espo's retirement night. Classy thing. I got Johnny Buse. All the years he spent, you know, as a player, as a broadcaster, he was, if you said Boston Bruins, you know, back in the 60s and the 70s, and Johnny Buse is the guy that comes to mind. You know, and it's one of my all-time favorite goals. He got the puck just to the left of the goal, and he lets the puck sit in the ice, and he fakes a flip. The goalie sprawls. He then goes back to the puck, picks it up, and throws it over the goalie. One of the most absolutely astounding goals I've ever seen. Totally deked the goalie out. I still have that best memory of Johnny Busick. And just the hip check that he would be in the penalty box for nowadays, where we're so masterfully done, you know, guy coming through center ice, he just bend over, roll him over the hip, and take the puck away and go the other way. It was just incredible. So Busick was my four, and I got Rick Middleton as my
overlooked.
Nipsey, he was so smooth, so clever with the stick in front of the net. You know, and he had big Peter McNabb centering him, and McNabb was, I guess, well, throw it at the net and let Middleton come in and swipe at it. He's a little bit of Brad Marchand before his time.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Final, a final thought.
Go ahead.
If you care from
yep.
very quickly. What tells us that the three? What tells me is that the three of us have are still sane. That we're not insane. Is that we did not include Kyrie Irving on any of
them. No Kyrie Irving. No, that's true. Or what was Sidney Wicks either? He wasn't on the list either.
Right.
One of the things I just thought of, just as what do you call it? A stream of consciousness. As you two were doing the Celtics list, I was thinking of who would have been a great Celtic. Who is a Celtic player who never played for the Celtics? And the first name, this was a stupid question, but you know what I'm saying?
And
I came up with three names. Dr. J.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry Lucas.
Sure.
And Kareem.
I went to his basketball camp.
To Lucas?
Yep.
Oh, man. I mean, just think. Dr. J, Jerry Lucas, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They were Celtics without being on the Celtics. Do you know what I'm trying to say, Mike?
Oh, yes, I do. And you know what? I mean, obviously just popping this into your head right now, but if I had to go off the top of my head, I would say Bill Bradley, who just
yep.
turned 80 years old.
Yep.
Was a consummate team player.
Yep.
I would love to have seen Earl Monroe.
Okay.
Celtic uniform. Yep. And I would like to see, I think Jokic is the perfect Celtic. Nikola Jokic is the, he's a unselfish, he's a team-oriented guy, he's a family-oriented guy, a phenomenal player who just won a title. I just think he would have been a perfect Celtic.
I love it.
The guy that I always wanted to see on the Celtics was Dave DeBuscher.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Was perfect Celtic material.
And he also played Major League Baseball, right, Tim?
That's
so.
Right. And then Red Sox could have used him at the same time.
Who was it? Gene Conley, who played both?
Yes, it was. Yep. Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Those days are gone. Okay, so the assignment this time is, and we're trying to whittle it down, Mike.
Yes.
We want to have the top three most memorable sports events. And we want to try to eliminate the obvious ones like... the
1980 Olympic team.
The 1980 Olympic team and maybe Malcolm Butler's interception, that kind of thing.
Okay.
We want to try to get something that's kind of personal. I don't know that I can do it by actually being in person because I have not attended that many, certainly professional things. But I've.
Oh, yeah, but there's so many more, Rick. I mean, you know, even if we go down to the high school level, you know, seeing state championships and that kind of thing,
yeah.
It were, like, thrilling to cover.
Well, you know what's funny? As you say that, I've got one. I've got one that I'm going to use from high school. Came right into my head. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Boy, this is fun. I look forward to this stuff, man. We're gonna get back into the local stuff, of course, in a few weeks when the Patriots get back in action, the Celtics, the fall season gets started, and, of course, high school sports. But right now, this is just fun reminiscing with you guys. I appreciate it.
Okay, that was a great tonight. Just sort of throwing out a lot of names and Mount Rushmore and punch players and all that. That's a great topic tonight.
I love it.
You know, Mike, it's a great mental exercise for us guys about our age.
It sure is. But you know what? We're bringing up names that young people might want to look up because to see how truly great these guys were, because these guys were not played, they didn't play for 3 or 4 years with a team and then signed to a bigger contract. Some of these guys played 15, 18, 20, Yastrzemski, 23 seasons?
Mm-hmm.
These are people that, you know, that were loyal to their teams and who accomplished a lot of things in their long careers.
Well, do you guys remember, I mean...
Like, you know, we have to qualify that, especially with baseball, because up till the early 1970s, there was the reserve clause.
Right.
And players couldn't leave their teams.
Right.
Well, that's true. And the thing is, I think what's missing, I think, in my view of what's going on in America right now is a complete failure of education. It's an epic fail. And that includes sports, because when I was a kid, I actually lived in Germany for quite a while where we didn't have TV as a kid. And I was forced to learn to read. And a couple of major sources for me for sports was, number one, Sport Magazine. I don't know if you remember Sport.
I sure do.
And the second one was the Sporting News. And then there was the NHL Digest. And I would go to the library. I couldn't afford the subscriptions, but I'd go to the library and read up on that stuff. And that's how I learned about Rabbit Marinville and Dizzy and Dizzy Dean and his brother and all that stuff. And Ty Cobb, reading about that. And as a kid, that was so long ago, but reading about it, it came to life. These guys were real athletes who accomplished great things.
Right.
And what we're doing now is just throwing it out there, and we appreciate that. But I read a lot of sports still. But you, as we've discussed before, Mike, you don't have access to the athletes the way you used to.
Right. Nothing new.
You know, Mike, when you were a kid, did you read Sports Illustrated or the Sporting News?
I would read the Sport Magazine, I would read Baseball Digest.
Oh, yep, Baseball Digest, yep.
Baseball Digest, Sporting News. Yeah, anything. I don't remember reading any NFL. I don't think there's anything like an NFL digest. So whatever I can get my hands on, you know, the specialty magazines in basketball as well, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
And biographies.
Sporting News was to, you know, I mean, before Sports Illustrated hit it big, everybody read the Sporting News.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. It was a paper.
Oh, you're about data.
It was a newspaper. All right, so I've got a political call coming here. Let me just cancel that. Good stuff, boys, and we'll do it again next week. Good Lord willing, the creek don't rise.
Three top moments.
Yeah, let's do it.
That sounds great.
All right.
Mike, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Be well.
You guys have a great week. Tim and Rick, have a great week.
Thanks, Mike. You too. Take care. All right, that's Mike Grenier, sports journalist. And Tim, this is fun tonight. We covered a lot of territory.
Yeah, it moved right along, that's for sure.
Okay. All right, Coach, we'll talk to you next Monday, I think. There's no holiday next Monday, so we should be good.
That's why I am. All right, we'll see you
later. All right, thanks, Tim. Take care.
Yeah.
All right, bye-bye. That's Tim Kearns, who is our sports analyst and, of course, our ambassador of goodwill here at MSO News Sports. And don't forget, Sports Desk coming up at the end of the week with Nick and Nick. All kinds of good stuff here. We're doing football coaches' profiles that you'll want to check out, plus our daily North Shore Today news magazine. Bill Newell is taking a bit of a break, so he'll be back with us. Well, he's still in touch with us, so, you know, he's just kind of off tonight. So we appreciate that. And the Salem News Sporting Department will be back with their show, of course, next week. This is MSO News Sports. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, and you can also leave a message on the hotline at 978-325-3638, 978-325-3638. So on behalf of Tim and Mike and Steve and Bill and Marty, appreciate your being with us. Thank you very much, and spread the word. Be well and do the right thing. Bye-bye.